Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the April 3rd meeting of Orrville City Council. If you would stand, please, we'll be led in prayer this evening by Pastor Geraldo Nunez.
Heavenly Father, thanks so much for this day. Thanks for the opportunity to be here tonight. I just ask that your Holy Spirit will be present tonight, that you open hearts and minds and help this group to make right decisions for the city. Thanks so much for your son that he died for us and gave us eternal life. Everything I pray and I ask in the name of our son Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Pastor. We have roll call, please.
Shu.
Here.
Wilson.
Here.
Vance.
Here.
Hampshire.
Present.
Asparis.
Here.
Korfman.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Thank you. Everyone should have received a copy of the minutes of our meeting from March 20th. Are there any additions or corrections to those minutes? Yes, sir.
Mr. President, I move those minutes be accepted as document.
Thank you. Second, Mr. Vance.
Wilson.
Yes.
Vance.
Yes.
Hampshire.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Korfman.
Yes.
Larson.
Yes.
Shu.
Stream.
We have no public comments scheduled for this evening. We'll move to our standing committee reports. Finance, Mr. Asparis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Finance has not met in the last couple weeks, so I have no report this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Utilities, Mr. Korfman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Utility committee has no report.
Thank you. Health and safety. Mr. Vance.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I don't get to go very often, but I did have a chance to go to the WARCOG board meeting last week. So it's good to be with that group and got an update on dispatching operations. In summary, I would say that the center is operating very, very well. And we're very pleased with how it's performing and the service that it's providing and the savings that it's providing to taxpayers. Thank you.
Thank you. Parks and Recreation, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Parks and Recreation has no report tonight.
Transportation, welcome back, Mr. Shu.
Thank you, Mr. President. I also have no report tonight.
Thank you. But you did walk in, so that's another form of transportation.
Yes.
Planning, Mr. Hampshire.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have no report.
Thank you. Ordinance and Personnel, Mr. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. No report from Ordinance and Personnel tonight.
Thank you. We have no special committee reports. We'll move to administrative reports. Mayor Hanward.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two items tonight. One is to mention that our April Employee of the Month is Eric Maybaugh from the Power Plant Maintenance Department. Eric was hired as a maintenance welder, too, in 2013 after having worked as a welder with Babcock & Wilcox Company in Barberton. He has made an impact in his department by performing boiler and steam turbine repairs and also helping out in the operations department for a time. After serving as a crew leader on the Boiler 13 gas burner conversion, Eric was promoted to Maintenance Worker 3 welder in December 2016. All the workers did a fantastic job on the conversion, and Eric was a big part of its success, showcasing his welding talents, patience, and persistence. Eric Supervisor Dwight Hartzler comments that Eric has a great personality and is very easy to get along with. Eric and his wife Ruth have four children, Hudson, Tucker, Eleanor, and Adler. They enjoy the country living and the outdoors, residing in south of Worcester. Eric also enjoys hunting and other outdoor activities, but prefers his vacations to be warm and sunny, like a lot of us do. And congratulations to Eric. And we will be having lunch together this Friday. And secondly, I'd like to just mention that on Thursday, we have a ceremony to commemorate, really, the entry of the United States into World War I, 1917, so 100th anniversary. This is a ceremony that's actually been put together by Anna Davidson, who is the daughter of former Mayor Howard Wade. She has gotten a group together, including the Triple Nickel, that some of you may know that are very involved in a lot of military exercises around here and do a fantastic job. The plan right now is to have this at Liberty Park, or sometimes known as Veterans Park, over by the depot, by the Bell, right there by Market Street. And that is Thursday afternoon at 3:12. That's the time. And I don't know what we're going to do if the weather changes drastically. Honestly, it doesn't sound too good forecast-wise. She will be getting back with me probably tomorrow, and we'll have a better idea if that's going to be moved indoors, if the weather's going to be bad. So we'll hear more from her on that. But that is Thursday afternoon. And that is all I have.
Thank you. Our Safety Service Director, Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you, Mr. President. Norfolk Southern is hoping to start track repairs on Main Street this month. We will hopefully get plenty of notice so we can let everyone know, all the local industries and residents, so that they can plan appropriately. Obviously, that is the schedule as of now, but it is subject to postponement due to weather and all those other variables. The service department this next couple weeks is working on basin repair, park prep, and patching as the weather permits. Also, the Orville Compost Center opens up this Wednesday, April 5th. Hours are 7:30 a.m. to 11:15 a.m. and 12:15 p.m. to 3:15 p.m. on Wednesdays, and also open on Saturdays from 8 a.m. to noon. We accept leaves, grass, branches, shrubs, and trees, excluding stumps and roots. And the service is for Orville residents only. And since I better save my voice for all the legislation tonight, that concludes my report.
Thank you. Our Utilities Director, Mr. Brediger.
Thank you, Mr. President. A couple items from the Electric Department. Last week, Orville, the City of Painesville, and the City of Dover filed a petition with the United States Supreme Court. This is dealing with some lingering legal efforts, issues that are related to one of the EPA rules that came out in 2014. It addresses some issues that the government wants to regulate when we have some unforeseen things happen during normal operations. It's been an issue that about 100,000 affected entities have been arguing for the past 3 years, and then it finally has some traction. If the Supreme Court does elect to hear this, this may be the first environmental case that goes before that court, and has the possibility of being decided. That would be assuming that Judge Gorsuch, President's elected nominee, gets that slot filled. So we'll see when that happens. We should have some indication on whether or not the court is interested in hearing this case within the next couple months. But continuing legal battles dealing with a rule that is in the strongest of cases been pretty unfavorable to us over the past couple of years. We have begun reassembly of turbine 11, the high pressure turbine that was taken out of service a few weeks ago. We did not find the direct cause of the intermittent vibration issues that we were having, but we did. We are addressing about a handful of suspect issues, some contributing areas within that unit that may, between the two or three of them combined together, given us some of the problems that we're having. We should have that unit together within the next couple of weeks. Just under the miscellaneous category, our electric utility, as you're aware or may not be aware, our state joint action agency does go through a credit rating on the electric utility for all the municipalities that are members of AMP, and Orville Utilities scored a 95 out of 100 in their last credit scoring. This is based on our 2015 financials. We do have a couple of policy additions that we'll be making after we review our rates later on this year, and those policy amendments will get that credit score rating up closer to the 100% level, probably in the 2016 review when it comes about. And other than that, I do have our utility annual report to present to City Council later on in the agenda. That's all the comments I have tonight, sir.
Thank you. To our finance director, Ms. Strimlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just have one quick item. The fund balance report for the period ending February 28th, 2017, you should have found in your folders this evening. And I would just ask for a motion to approve that report subject to audit.
I'll approve that report.
Thank you. Second, Mr. Cortman.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Korfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Thank you. Move to our law director, Mrs. Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have no report this evening. I will have some comments for council during the executive session later this evening.
Thank you. For my comments for this evening, when you came in this evening, and probably when you got up this morning, if you noticed, there's lots of more green out there right now. I think we're getting close to spring being here, although the weatherman said there may be some more white stuff toward the end of the week. But with all that extra green out there, we have a lot of young people, young ladies and young men that like to play baseball and softball. They're out in our parks. Things are going to be busy down at Orr Park for the next few months. So when you drive by there, make sure you keep your eyes open. You never know when a ball's gonna fly across the street, and some of those youngsters forget to look both ways. So just keep all of those kids in mind. We're now ready for our old business. Mr. Larson.
Ordinance number C-17. I move we place this ordinance on second reading.
Second, Mr. Wilson.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Korfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Ordinance number C-17. An ordinance approving the editing and inclusion of certain ordinances as parts of the various component codes of the codified ordinances of the City of Orrville, Ohio, and declaring an emergency.
All right. Any explanation for this one? I think it's pretty self-explanatory. We got the big stack of papers.
Yes, sir, it is. It's an annual housekeeping item. Basically, what we're doing with this legislation is incorporating any legislation passed by City Council in 2016 into our codified ordinances. And this is the official acceptance of those as being part of those ordinances.
Any comments? Nope.
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of an ordinance on three separate dates be suspended.
Second, Mr. Korfman.
Asparis?
Yes.
Korfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
I move that ordinance number C-17 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Asparis.
Korfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Thank you. That was the only item under old business. Mr. Larson will now move to new business.
Resolution number 917. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Corson.
Corson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Bam?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Resolution number 917. A resolution imposing a moratorium for a period not to exceed 365 days from the effective date of this resolution on the issuance and processing of any permits allowing retail dispensaries, cultivators, or processors of medical marijuana within the city of Orrville, state of Ohio, and declaring an emergency.
Mr. Wheeler, do you have anything on this one?
I think this was our moratorium is nearing expiration. I believe council's wishes was to extend that moratorium. I think in talking with our law director, we were comfortable with a year additional time as the state still considers all the different legalese that has to be done in order to prepare for that medicinal marijuana to be in place.
Okay. Anyone have any questions? Mr. Vance.
That's not a comment. We don't even know what the rules are going to be or what any of this looks like. So rather than a business be grandfathered in to rules that you know, we have no idea, we're just going to put a moratorium on this. So I believe the new regulations are to go into effect next fall, like September of 2018, if I remember right. So this would run out, of course, next April, and that's really when the debate will take place about what Orrville's response will be. I imagine it will be next year. So. And this is simply to not allow a business to be grandfathered in before we even know what this is going to be.
Right. So. Anyone else have any comments?
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on three separate days be suspended.
Second, Mr. Hampshire.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
I move resolution number 917 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Hampshire.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Resolution number 1017. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Corbin.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Resolution number 1017. A resolution to establish the classification of assistant fire chief in the classified service of the city of Orrville, Ohio, and repealing all legislation inconsistent herewith.
Any comments? Chief, would you like to, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, I would just like to get Phil in on this.
Absolutely.
Somebody.
What this is our fire chief has submitted his plans to retire this year. What this position would do would give us the opportunity to have an assistant fire chief full-time, and that would be full-time on a temporary basis as he transitions into the fire chief position. So they would overlap, be able to work with the new fire chief so we can transition smoothly. Very similar to what I was able to do with Becky Jewell, as well as Ms. Strimlin and Phil McFerrin as well with our predecessors. It worked very smooth for us. With the fire chief being the only full-time individual, I think we have a good feel for what he does, but we want those folks that are going to take over in his place to have an opportunity to shadow him and work with him. So that transition is very smooth. This is
then at the end of the chief's term or whatever, his retirement, this position will dissolve?
Correct. It then goes back to being a part-time, similar to what we have today.
Okay.
It's truly meant only to be an interim for the transition.
And when will this go into effect as far as a specific person? For this position, do you have any idea?
Because this is a new position, we have to go through the whole process of advertising. It also has to be created by the Civil Service Commission. This step tonight is the first step in that process. Our goal, based on our timeline with me and Mr. McFerrin, is to have that individual in place by sometime in May. And the chief is still working.
You have an individual chosen for this position by May?
Correct.
Okay.
It's a pretty aggressive schedule, but we want that individual to have an opportunity to transition. The chief has a tentative date in mind, but he's still meeting with OPERS to determine his retirement date. So the quicker the better, so that that position can transition, assuming he retires as expected in the fall.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Anyone else? Mr. Corp?
Thank you, Mr. President. If I'm correct, this does not declare an emergency, so this will take effect 30 days after when we pass
that is
it. So even if we pass it tonight, they still have 30 days before anything happens. And, of course, Mr. McFerrin and yourself will have the whole job search still to come.
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Any other comments?
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on three separate days be suspended.
Second, Mr. Vance.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
I move resolution number 1017 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Corfman.
Asparis?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Resolution number 1117. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Corfman.
Corfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Resolution number 1117, a resolution authorizing the Board of Control to enter into an agreement and or agreements with the State of Ohio Purchasing Cooperative Department of Administrative Services to purchase one 2017 or newer Ford F-250 pickup truck for the Cemetery Department of the City of Oroville, Ohio, or alternatively, to purchase said vehicle from another dealer upon equivalent terms, conditions, and specifications, but at a lower price than it can be purchased through the state contract as allowed by Ohio Revised Code Section 125.04, or alternatively, to advertise for bids and enter into an agreement and or agreements for said purchase and declaring an emergency.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Mr. President. Could someone refresh my memory on the budget, what the budget amount was for this?
The budget amount is $30,000, but we do expect it to come in within that budgeted amount. It is a replacement of a cemetery a vehicle currently being used primarily for the cemetery.
Uh-huh.
It is 23 years old, so it definitely has served its purpose. And this would be paid for out of cemetery funds since it is going to be used primarily for the cemetery. So it would not come out of our general capital funds.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions or comments?
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes for, requiring the reading of a resolution on three separate days be suspended.
Second. Second, Mr. Spears.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
I move resolution number 1117 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Wilson.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Resolution number 1217. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Spears.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Resolution number 1217. A resolution authorizing the Board of Control to enter into an agreement and/or agreements without bidding to purchase one Ventrac tractor for the Cemetery Department of the City of Orrville, Ohio, and declaring an emergency.
Any comments?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. President. This, too, is a piece of equipment that will be used primarily at the cemetery. It is replacing a almost 25-year-old Ventrac. It will be, again, used, since it is going to be used primarily at the cemetery, it will be funded by cemetery funds.
Anyone have any questions or comments?
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on three separate days be suspended.
Second, Mr. Spears.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Espiris?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
I move resolution number 1217 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Corfman.
Hampshire?
Aye.
Espiris?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Resolution number 1317. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Wilson.
Espiris?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Resolution number 1317. A resolution authorizing the Board of Control to procure quotes from various vendors and then enter into an agreement and/or agreements without bidding to repair the wall of the Pine Street Garage for the Police Department of the City of Orrville, Ohio, and declaring an emergency.
Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you, Mr. President. Unfortunately, the Pine Street Garage, which is used to house police vehicles, is the east wall is crumbling. I guess there's no other word to use, to be honest with you. As a result, we'd like to procure quotes from local vendors or local contractors to come in. It's going to be a wall repair slash replace, as well as reattach the roof end of the wall and just get that back reinforced to where it's safe and secure to use again. That was noticed a few months ago. We have band-aided it temporarily, knowing that we need to get through the budget process, so we would like to move forward on that fairly quickly. And it was discovered when during a storm when rain started pouring in as if there was very little wall there. So,
Mr. Hampshire.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will the Pine Street facility be out of commission for any period of time, or will it still be operational?
They will still be able to use part of that. I don't know if the chief will want to just to sort of stay in everybody's way, but with the weather turning for us, it's not as critical that, you know, that we'd be under roof, so to speak, in the short term. So I could see where we'll temporarily house that equipment elsewhere while they complete the work.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Wheeler, how many quotes would you hope to gather?
Well, we're going to get at least three quotes.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on three separate days be suspended.
Second, Mr. Corfman.
Corfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Espiris?
Yes.
I move resolution number 1317 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Hampshire.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Espiris?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Resolution number 1417. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Hampshire.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Korfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Resolution number 1417, a resolution authorizing the Board of Control to procure quotes from various vendors and then enter into an agreement and or agreements without bidding to replace the floor of the fire station number 1 for the fire department of the city of Orville, Ohio, and declaring an emergency.
Okay. Mr. Wheeler?
Thank you, Mr. President. We talked about this. Pardon me?
I said, or the chief, either one.
Well, I'm sure you'd be glad to answer any questions you might have. This is an item we talked about in our budget workshop. The current floor has lasted us over 50 years. We are experiencing some cracking and some deterioration. As a result, we'd like to replace that flooring. We do plan to get, I believe, 4 bids or quotes on that, and the project would be funded primarily via EMS fund, but also some general fund as well for the fire truck side of things.
Any questions? Yeah. Yes,
thank you, Mr. President. Are you talking about the tiled part of the station or the bays where the trucks are at?
Where the bays, sir.
The concrete where the bays are at is broke up that much?
Well, I wouldn't say they're broke up. They're deteriorating. They're crumbling around some certain sections, and we just feel like it's time to get those replaced and last us hopefully another 50 years.
Jeez, that's a heated facility. I'm surprised it would get deteriorated even in 50 years. I'm just surprised me because I was here for the budget meeting that we talked it, if you talked about it.
So. Yeah, no, that's fine. Chief Valentine may have something to add there.
Really not so much for the replacement of the whole floor as it is to repair a lot of all the around the trench drains all chipping out or all the steel around that and then to do an epoxy coating on the entire floor.
Okay, so you're all right. I thought you meant you were going to tear the whole concrete.
Oh, no, floor. I'm sorry. I should have been a little more clear on that.
Okay.
A lot of big chips in the floor around the trench drain from the slope getting down in around the metal.
Yeah. Okay, that's a lot more understandable. All right. Thank you.
And if I may, I think the key to replacing those parts is to get that epoxy in place. Then once everything's all good to go, and then the floor should be great for.
It'll be a very strategic project for us in regards to getting those bays done systematically.
Any other questions?
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of the resolution on 3 separate days be suspended.
Second, Mr. Wheeler. Second, Mr. Wilson.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Korfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shue?
Yes.
I move resolution number 1417 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Korfman.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Korfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shue?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Resolution number 1517. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Korfman.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Korfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shue?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Resolution number 1517, a resolution authorizing the Board of Control to enter into an agreement and or agreements without bidding to purchase 12 complete Scott self-contained breathing apparatus air packs model 75 or X3 plus 12 spare bottles for the fire department of the city of Orville, Ohio, and declaring an emergency.
Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll try to be a little more clear on this one. This is our third phase of our SCBA replacement project. These normally have a lifespan of about 15 years, so now that we're through this third phase, once assuming approval, you won't see this item back on for a number of years. And again, this is we'll then have 36 full sets, and we'll be able to equip everyone appropriately with up-to-date equipment.
Any Questions or comments?
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on three separate days be suspended.
Second, Mr. Vance.
Asparis?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
I move resolution number 1517 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Wilson.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Resolution number 1617. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Corkman.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes.
Resolution number 1617. A resolution authorizing the Board of Control to enter into an agreement and or agreements with the State of Ohio Purchasing Cooperative Department of Administrative Services to purchase 40 Marks pagers for the Fire Department of the City of Oroville, Ohio, and declaring an emergency.
Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is the transition over to the pagers, Marks pagers. We currently have DHF frequency pagers. To be honest, we've had some difficulty with them lately. This is the only item left that is not on Marks. The feeling of by our chief is to transition these over as well. These are part of the capital budget and would be paid for primarily with EMS funds, since a large majority of our calls these days are EMS calls. We have 40 in there. We don't believe we'll need to purchase the full 40 initially. Once we grow that, the number in our department, we may need that 40 total, but right now we're looking at closer to 35.
Any questions or comments?
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on three separate days be suspended.
Second, Mr. Asparis.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
I move resolution number 1617 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Vance.
Wilson?
Yes.
Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Thank you. That completes our new business for this evening. We now have the opportunity to listen to our utilities director, Mr. Rediger. He's going to present his annual report this evening.
Since I'm sitting beside you. Is that
That's not this November, is it? Because we're doing
it. I'll let it go. They said it was fine.
Maybe he's running for that.
You are there?
And then her look, I doubted myself.
Ready to go?
Hi, good evening. My name is Jeff Redinger, Director of Utilities for Orville Utilities, and here to provide our 2016 annual report. Wanted to start off with the makeup of our utility board. We do have a five-member board. You can see the members here. We do have representatives from a lot of our businesses and industries, including our schools. Serve a four-year term, and they can serve up to 12 years. Just a couple of highlights. This board is appointed by the mayor. All three of our utilities are nonprofit. We'll start with the wastewater department. We'll look at a couple of highlights here. 2016, we focused a lot of our time on the electric utility. But our overall utility expenditures for the year were just a little bit over $46 million. You'll hear us talk a little bit about the conversion of the one unit over to natural gas. We had a failure on our number 9 generator that we'll talk about briefly. We did convert all of our street lights over to LED. That and the natural gas conversion was part of the EPA settlement in 2015. Three of the four of our hydroelectric projects came online. We'll talk a little bit more about those later on. And just recently, the board and city council approved participation in a solar development, and we'll talk about those a little bit later on. I will start with the wastewater facility. This is an overview of the site. We'll see a little bit more information in the future, but this is one of south of the facility will be where one of the solar sites will be located at. This utility has been around for a while, since the early 1900s. This gives you some typical statistics from the plant. This year we completed about $2.7 million worth of projects and upgrades. Most of these were EPA mandated equipment installations. We had to install some new screens, renovate one of our blower buildings, and one of our aeration tanks. Well, everybody kind of likes to know what the stuff looks like before and after, and that is kind of what that plant basically does. This is this facility is probably the most dynamic and the most diverse of all of our utilities. It's a ongoing process chemistry plant. At the end of the day, including all of our testing, we still require and rely on a lot of requests from our aquatic friends. If you go down in our lab, this aquarium is in the outflow stream of our effluent that goes into the Little Chippewa Creek there. So if the fish are happy, we also have fleas and other small aquatic animals out there that we do test on a live basis. All the water, all the material that does come into the plant, majority of it does end up in the Little Chippewa Creek. It's through this outflow where we do siphon off a portion to run through the fish tank. We were, up until last year, recycling about 200,000 gallons a day at the power plant as part of our cooling water system. Some EPA changes last year that was targeting our coal plant and other coal plants prohibited the use of that. That was a great recycling effort that we were doing, and that kind of came to an end. We do, with all that water, at the end of the day, in our chemical process, our mechanical process, to remove all the waste, we do end up with about 1 million gallons of sludge every year. That material is dried out, and that gets land applied to area farms. This picture just gives you an idea on where the various products come from. It's pretty evenly split between our residential food processors and our industrial customers. You do see there's a big portion of that that still finds its way through aging infrastructure, the way the water and the sanitary or the storm systems were installed a long time ago. There are some cross connections in there, so we do process a lot of storm water through our facility, and each year we try to minimize that. From a revenue perspective, this is where bulk of the revenue come in, most of it from our residential customers, and then the other half kind of spread pretty evenly between our food processors and industrial and commercial customers. This is where our rates stack up with relative to the states. You can kind of see if we use this, the state's average use number, that's about where our rates come in at. Our customer usage is actually lower than the state average, which puts our numbers even lower than where the state's at. The state last updated this in 2015. I did have the 2016 numbers for the water or the wastewater. It gives you an idea where we are at relative to the state average. I will tell you that this utility is in the process of undergoing a rate study, and we will be looking at bringing to the board some recommendations to deal with some aging infrastructure going forward. And I'll also kind of point out, too, the last time we had any adjustments in our wastewater treatment plant rates was in 1998. So Mr. Auten, who's our wastewater superintendent, has done an excellent job down there keeping costs down and avoiding the need to adjust our rates for quite a long while. Our water utility is next. Todd Fitty is our plant superintendent down there. This gives you an idea of the size of the facility. Both the water and wastewater utilities operate on about a $3 million a year budget. This utility also is in the process of undergoing a rate review. We do have a lot of infrastructure that we're looking to address in the coming years. And we have a large project to replace the water main on High Street between Crown Hill and Main Street in 2018. This gives you an idea of what the underground distribution system looks like, as well as our underground tanks. You know, we do have most of our water system is out of sight, out of mind. This graph just gives you a picture of where the revenues come from, and the one thing I want to point out in this, which will change quite a bit in 2017, is this portion of revenue that comes from the power plant. Ever since the EPA imposed some pretty tight operating restrictions on us a couple years ago, and even prior to that, we've seen the day where the usage of the power plant was going to be minimized in the near future. In 2017, these revenues will be dropping down into the neighborhood of around $100,000. So that $700 figure is about 20% of that water utility's revenues, and we will have to be making some adjustments to try to balance the finances in that utility going forward. This picture is similar to what we looked at for the wastewater. It shows where Orville's rates are using the state's average water usage relative to the rest of the state. Our actual customers' water usage is down below the state's average. So in general, relative to what our customers are seeing on an annual basis, we are paying less than the state's average. I find this picture a little, little interesting. It just kind of gives you an idea of where our fresh water in the world comes from. And only 3% of the water in the world is fresh water. Of that 3%, you can see where most of that comes from. All of our water that serves all of our customers in the city of Warrville all comes from underground aquifers. And, you know, we just happen to kind of be in that region. We're strategically located in a nice portion of the United States where water generally is not a problem for us, but for others, especially those that are out on the West Coast and other portions, even along the East Coast, water is a big issue, and going forward, we'll be watching that as those resources become a little bit more on topic. The power plant is next. We're going to have a little birthday party this year. The electric utility turns 100 years old this year, so we are planning a open house along with some other events sometime in the late summer, early fall. So when we get some more information out on that, we'll let you know. We are the youngest of the three utilities. A few statistics on the generating plant. You've seen this slide before. It gives you an idea of what our generating capability is. Our typical load on any given day is somewhere in between the mid-40s and the mid-50s. We'll see a peak that will be close to our plant's capacity. Dean Calborn oversees our day-to-day operations at the plant, and Dick Smith is our distribution superintendent that takes care of the wires side of our business. You'll see our retail sales were down a little bit from last year. A lot of that was due to milder temperatures. We did generate less kilowatt hours due to the generator 9 outage and the long outage that we took in the fall to convert 413 over to natural gas. Our purchase power costs were up a little bit last year due to the hydro facilities coming on board, and we were purchasing power during the summertime while that generator was out of service being repaired. Our power plant employees are down a lot over the past couple of years. A lot of those have gone through mainly retirements. Where our staffing level right at this present time is probably a little bit lower than I would like to see it right now. A historical chart that we've seen in the past kind of shows what our total retail sales pictures look like since the mid-1960s. You can kind of see this is the red lines are total sales, and the blue line are our industrial sales. And these two curves pretty much kind of follow each other there. Bulk of our sales, 60% of our sales, come from our industrial customers. The gray bars that are in there, I put those in there that just kind of shows some times when we were in some mode of recession. So you see these dips, especially the one that we had in the late 2000s and some of the tolls that it's taken here. But fortunately, our industries have continued to recover from those. And you see our residential and our commercial sales have been moderately increasing, but we did dip down here a little bit. This next chart kind of shows the United States sales. These are residential and commercial going up here, but you see down here in the right around the 2000 high period, you start seeing a flattening out and even a declining trend, and that has mainly been due to a lot of regulations came into play. We had a lot of relocations that came into play, high energy costs. We had two recessions in that period. From an industrial United States perspective, the past 15, 18 years have been pretty tough. We've had a little bit of the opposite story. Fortunately, this just gives you an idea from a sales breakout on where the our sales come from in the utility. And it's pretty much kind of half of it's pretty much split between residential and commercial, and the other half or most of the half is from our industrial customers. And you'll see of that here a couple of our two largest players. The next slide puts that in a little bit different perspective. You can kind of see who the major players are in town. Quality Castings has electric arc furnace operations. They can account for 40% of our electric demand at any given time. The J.M. Smucker Company, relative to Quality Castings, is about half their size. Smith Dairy, our third customer, is about half the size of Smith Dairy, to put things in perspective. And then you can see some of our other major industries kind of going forward. Our fifth largest customer, JLG, we are losing those folks this year. We'll talk a little bit more about the impact of those. But that's from electric utility customer. We will feel that in 2017 and 2018. This is a close-up view of one of the natural gas burners that was installed on Boiler 13 this past fall. As you're aware, the natural gas fuel over coal produces about half the amount of emissions. That's been one of the biggest drivers that was the EPA was after us as part of the settlement. One interesting note, this unit, now that we've converted over to gas, it burns enough gas in 1 hour to heat about 100 homes for a year. And to put that in perspective, this is a very small gas-fired utility boiler. This gas conversion project cost about $2 million. That included the Dominion East Ohio gas infrastructure cost. We had a couple people ask us, in addition to just the demands that we had to replace that, what other economics are there? And I will tell you that this one unit offsets transmission costs that will pretty much have this project paid for within the first year of its operation. These are the two lower burners. We have two upper ones above that. Our plant personnel installed all this equipment this past fall, and we saved ourselves comfortably $150,000 doing that work. This is one of the high-pressure gas regulating stations that Dominion Eastern Ohio installed for us. Looking forward on with respect to the plant, what's down the pike for us? Certainly, as natural gas continue to be lower, that puts our that plant in better economic position. We're certainly expecting some slowing of regulations coming from Washington. Again, we'll talk a little bit more about this this value that the plant has, being able to operate during the peak periods of the year. Last year, those transmission and capacity credits that we received from the transmission side of our business saved us about $6.2 million in cost avoidance. One of the risks that were situations that we're in today that we have not been in for a long time is the fact that this plant, due to the restrictions on the coal units and the economic restrictions when we're burning gas, will have us having that entire plant idle maybe 60% of the time, 60 to 70% of the time. That means during those periods we'll be relying on our interconnection, our connection with the national electric grid to provide all the energy from our projects and from market purchases. Things go bump in the middle of the night and that transmission line goes down. We can still provide all the energy we need to our customers, but there's going to be a little bit of a wait time before that energy gets reestablished. And going forward, we still are looking for new generation opportunities, market purchases to work on into our long-term power supply plan. This just gives you an idea on how the plan operated last year relative to our sales. These are sales across the top, and you can see the plant operated roughly 40% of the time last year. The gaps were filled by the other projects that we have ownership in or market purchases. You've seen this chart before, but I want to bring it up because the next two look a little bit different than this one. From 1917 up to 2002, all of our energy came, for the most part, from the power plant, all coal-fired. The balance was made up by purchases we made in the wholesale power market through third-party suppliers, and a small portion of us was through a hydro allocation from the federal government. Here's where we were at in 2016, and here's where we will be at in 2017. You can see that the pie chart has changed quite a bit. 2016, about 43% came from the power plant, 25% this year, and going around the color wheel is our interest that we have in the Fremont Natural Gas Plant, purchases that we're making in the power open market, followed by our interest in our Prairie State Coal Plant, the hydro projects, and a little bit of the wind project that we have. So you can see just from 2012 to 2016, the amount of change utility has gone through, and even this year, as we're continuing this transition process, even bigger changes from a power supply diversity coming into our customers that does lower some risk for us, but it creates some other opportunities that we're working very hard to resolve. From a project perspective, all the energy that we do not generate at the plant comes from our generation assets, our hydro facility, our Fremont Natural Gas Plant, and our purchases that we make in the power market. Those collectively were just a little bit over $18 million last year. You can see this portion in the red is what we paid in transmission charges. This is just the fees that we pay to deliver the energy from wherever our projects are, wherever they're located, to the border of the city of Warville. Those last year amounted to about $6 million. About 6-8 years or so ago, that was about $200,000. Had we not generated credits from operating the plant during these peak periods, that bill would have been $12 million. So those credits that plant generates, even if it only operates during the peak periods of the summer and the winter, the folks that manage and control the transmission grid pays us last year in the neighborhood of about $6.2 million. I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about our long-term power supply projects. As you're aware, we have interest in some hydro facilities down along the Ohio River. This is a federal hydro allocation that we've been receiving for several decades now, and then we'll talk about the other four. Our hydro projects, if you recall back in the late 2000s when the energy prices in the markets were escalating at enormous annual inflation rates, we decided to kind of diversify our energy portfolio and look at some other resources out there so we weren't always being held to the mercy of the power market. And one of the projects that we embarked on was partnering with several other municipalities and developing four hydroelectric facilities on the Ohio River lock and dam system. And this is one of our projects. And we have about 12 megawatts out of our 63 megawatts coming from our hydro facilities. We have four plants that were part of this project. The Campbellton facility went in service this year. Mellow on Willow Island went in service this year, first quarter this year. Smithland is still under construction. We expect the three units at that facility in Kentucky to start up this May, June. This is what this facility looks like under construction. Most of this plant is submerged. This would be the inlet. The water level of the Ohio River, once this plant's in operation, is slightly above the intake screens. and a number of you have, or a couple of you have toured the facility. This is what that facility looks like prior to it going into commercial operation. This is our Campbellton facility. This is the Whittle Island facility. This is the smallest of the three hydroelectric facilities. This is the current dam, the lock at the Whittle Island gates, and then the hydro facilities were built on the opposite side of the locks. River's kind of going from the bottom up towards the ceiling. Just a different view of one of our other sites. This is the Melville facility. This is east of Cincinnati. And again, the existing dam system, the locks, and the 100-megawatt three-unit hydro facility on the opposite side. This is the Smithland facility that's still under construction. The water levels of these things, if you were standing on this side and if you were on the other side of the facility, that varies between 20 and 80 feet. So it's the difference in that water level that provides the energy in the form of water flowing through the water turbines. Our Prairie State project, this plant went into commercial operation in 2012. This is one of the last state-of-the-art coal-fired generating facilities in the United States that was constructed. We received about 5 megawatts of energy from this this project. This plant operates on an average of about 92% of the time of the year, as does our coal plant. The Fremont facility, this is up in Fremont, Ohio. This is a state-of-the-art combined cycle natural gas facility. This unit also went in service in 2012. We receive about a little bit less than a third of the energy coming from this facility. This plant operates about 60% of the time. This has been a great project, especially with today's natural gas prices. And we are one of about 90 owners that own this particular facility. The wind project that we're involved with, we do not own any of these assets. These were purchased from a third-party energy provider. But if you drive along State Route 30 in western Ohio, just before you get to the Indiana border, you'll see about 150 of these things popped up out of the ground. And we receive about 2 megawatts of energy from this project. These wind units are considered a renewable resource, a green energy. One of the downsides of these things is last year these things only were capable of producing energy a little bit less than 30% of the time. Very cheap power when it's when they're spinning. When they're not, there's no energy coming from it. The good thing about that is we're only paying for the energy that's produced when they are in service. And this energy that we actually receive from this project through 2022 is the second cheapest amount of energy that we buy, but it only represents about 2% of the total amount of kilowatt hours that we purchase on an annual basis. We'll talk about some future projects. We did recently talk about developing some solar. We'll look at those a little bit later on. These are high efficiency gas units that we are looking at not only for our site here, but maybe part of another joint project with other municipalities. High efficiency gas engines are some options that we're looking at. And we have a couple more developers that have some wind facilities under construction and some existing sites that are interested in selling us more energy out of that. This is one of the one of two solar sites that that are under development. This is out at our newest industrial park. Smith Dairy is right down in this area. This is Venture Products. This is the site up in the northeast corner. This is on existing wetlands. We have some other issues in there that don't make that particular building site very conducive to development. It's a great site and application for this. This is about a 6-acre site that would yield about a megawatt of solar at the end of the day. There would be about 6,000 individual panels on this site once it's developed. And we're expecting that to be completed towards the latter part of this year, early 2018. The other site is just south of our existing wastewater treatment facility. This site is about twice as big and has a projected energy output of about 2 megawatts, or about twice the size of the other facility on the other side of 57. To put things into perspective, again, this is Allen Drive. Pizza Hut's over there off the left. The Rails to Trails bike trail will come down this existing railway. It'll hang a right. It'll follow the creek and the solar site, and then it'll make another hard turn and come back out on Allen Drive and Rails to Trails. Rails to Trails route will take you out to State Route 57. This is an existing tank from a former wastewater treatment plant that'll actually be demolished at the end of the day. These panels will pretty much fill up this entire site. This is a chart that kind of stacks up all of our energy resources that we have relative to where our load is projected over the next several decades. And as you can see, up until we get up to the to this line right here, most of the energy that we'll be producing either comes from the current generation plant or our other assets that we have ownership with other municipalities. This red hashed-in area is the amount of energy that we're out on the power market on. We're purchasing this from third-party suppliers. Buying energy in today's energy market is not a bad place for us to be. The power prices are actually down lower. You'll see that in the next couple of slides. These folks that are selling energy in the wholesale market are now starting to talk about longer-term contracts, so we're evaluating those. We reevaluate our long-term power supply on an annual basis. I pull up this chart kind of a little bit of a reminder on where energy prices were not that long ago, and it was during this time period where we started looking at the exposure our plan had from a long-term perspective and where the energy markets were going, and the fact that we just didn't have a lot of control over what those costs were going to be. So this is it was during this time period where we started looking at our interest in hydro projects, our interest in the Prairie State project, the natural gas project. These prices were just escalating year after year, and not to buy a little bit, by a whole bunch. Unfortunately, the recession came around there and took the wind out of everybody's sails, and you kind of see what the energy prices have done since then. The next slide will kind of pick up on that to see that kind of continuing down in a more downward trend. It's not quite as steep as it looks because the scale is a little is not exactly aligned with the previous slide, but you can get a general picture on what the influence of natural gas has had on the electric market and what that kind of means for us in the long term. And that's why I said a couple slides ago where our position, the fact that we don't either have the assets or we won't be generating all of that energy, the fact that we're out on the market and we're able to purchase a portion of that energy today puts us in a good position with respect to keeping our rates in check. This next slide is a little more global picture on where the energy comes from in the United States. And you can still see there's if we would have looked at this thing 10 years ago, the coal portion and natural gas portion would have been completely flipped around. And see, today a little bit over 40% of the energy in the United States comes from natural gas, followed by coal, about a quarter, and then we're filling in with hydro and wind, and kind of go down the menu there. But you can kind of see who who the big players are in the industry going forward. And of when we get up to the top here, we get into a lot of renewables. And of that piece of pie in 2015, about 15% of the energy was coming from renewables. And this chart just kind of shows what is the makeup of renewables. In 2000, the bulk of it was hydro, some biomass. But in 2015, 2016, 2017, that's kind of split between hydro and solar, and we're starting to see some wind come into the picture. Now again, all those things are kind of great, but when we talked about those, solar is only out there for about 20% of the time. Wind, depending on where you have that located at, might be in that 20 to 40% of the time. Hydro is a little bit higher, so we have to worry about what we're going to do with the energy during those time periods when it's not being generated. This chart just kind of gives you an idea of what generation went in what time period. You can see back in the 50s and 60s, there was a lot of coal being put in, coal being the blue, and as we've moved into the 80s, 90s, 2000s, going forward there, natural gas pretty much kind of dominates the picture. This is kind of a more forward-looking going into 2040 on where the energy is projected to come from. According to the federal government, the inclining curve from natural gas is what we've seen on the previous curves. You see the continued decline of coal, but you still see coal in America's fuel mix for some time. The nuclear industry is still pretty flat. We don't see a lot of plants being developed. Actually, when we get out into 2035 and 2050, we see a number of plants that are at risk on not being renewed. So you see a nice steep increase from renewables, but again, a lot of kilowatt hours capable of being generated. The problem is trying to match that capability with where the demand's at. Just another chart of similar to what we looked at before, just kind of shows what's being added, and at least from our perspective, one of the things I look at a little bit more with respect to our long-term power supply, what's being retired. And you can see that there's been a lot of older coal and some older gas that was put in the early 2000s, retired going into 2020. And going forward, what's being built, a lot of solar is being built. You can't hardly pick up a paper today and we talk about all the solar going in, but again, that's only good as long as the sun is shining. We still have to figure out what we're going to do with those gaps when they do occur. And it's not an if they'll occur, it's when they occur. This last chart I showed you last year, and then the end of 2015, the amount of energy coming from coal was surpassed by natural gas, and this gap kind of continues there. So in 2015, for as long as we've been generating electricity in the United States, coal has predominantly been the main source of energy in the United States, and then in 2016, those curves flopped over and Vulcan's continue to see that gap going forward. And that's something that we have to keep our eyes on from a planning perspective, cost perspective. Right now we do have a lot of gas. Gas is relatively cheap, but we know how that story goes and some of the potential pitfalls going forward. I want to look at a couple of utility financials. Not going to spend a lot of time with these, but you'll see our annual report that will be out on our website here in a couple weeks. It'll have a lot more detail, but this is just a highlight out of the a couple of main finance line items. Our revenues were a little bit higher last year. That's mainly due to our collection, due to the more expensive hydro that came on board and the fact that we were purchasing some more energy with the generator 9 out of service. If you look there, you'll see our expenses continue to decrease. Our production maintenance did increase this year, and that's only because we bankrolled about half of the Generator 9 repairs from that. That was almost a $4 million loss that we turned in our insurance company. We expect to get about 90% of that back, but we paid for half of those repairs prior to insurance settlement out of our revenue fund. The other half came out of our capital savings fund. As I mentioned earlier, our sales were down a little bit more than 2015. Those are mainly more directly related just to the more wilder or milder temperatures that we had in the summer and the winter period. And you'll see our payroll have been dropping in all of our departments. Water utility, if you look at the revenues from that utility, they're generally flat. We will expect these numbers to drop noticeably in 2017 when those revenues from the fact that the power plant will not be using near as much water going forward. And again, we'll be needing to revisit our rates and kind of look for those to try to make sure that we can match those expenses against the projected incomes. Our capital reserves, this is the amount of the monies that we have set aside to deal with infrastructure upgrades. Those levels aren't where they ought to be. We have a lot of old infrastructure in underground that needs to be looked at, and we've been working on those over time. The plant is 20 years old. We're needing to make some investments in there, so we need to develop a plan that will allow us to move smartly from over the next 5-year period on that. The water utility is the only one of our three utilities that's still carrying a little bit of debt. Not very much. We expect to pay that debt off next year, and then all three of our utilities will be debt-free. Electric utility's been debt-free for a number of years, and the wastewater utility a little bit shorter period of time. Our wastewater utility, again, you'll see revenues are generally flat. They were up a little bit in 2016. We had a couple of our industrial customers that were having some issues with their pretreatment facilities that got into paying some pretty hefty fines. They have since then got most of that all figured out, and we don't expect to be seeing those additional revenues. That was really more of an anomaly for us. In general, all three utilities, if you look at us combined, the payroll was down a little bit. Our spending was up slightly, and that was mainly due to about half of that was due to the Generator 9 work that was done and the balance from our hydros coming online. Our receipts collectively in all three utilities were up about 5%. We are looking at rates on all three utilities for this year. We'll be having some discussions with the utility board in the near future on that. And the last thing from the financial perspective, the JLG plan shut down in September of this year. From the electric utility perspective, that is a $650,000 a year customer. The impact on our water and wastewater utilities are in the neighborhood of around $20,000 a year. So we have some work to do to be able to address that challenge next year. On top of those kind of challenges, these things you could probably look at and plug in your own companies. With the transitions at the power plant, we are looking at and evaluating the workforce across all three utilities, and including the city. We've been making some changes. We have a lot more work to do in that area, but that is an ongoing process. We are not getting any younger, and finding people to come in and do anything today is a huge challenge. I mentioned earlier we have some. We're somewhat optimistic that we're going to see a little relief from Washington with this administration. Time will tell on that, but certainly I hope we're not out chasing as much stuff coming out of Washington as we have the past 8 years. Transmission costs continue to be a huge issue for us, especially seeing that those seem to be going unchecked, and we really don't have any control over those. Us, along with other utilities, are dealing, trying to address this with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission in Washington, D.C. Grid security and reliability, we haven't had that up on our radar before because we haven't relied on the grid as much as we have before. That was all true up until 2016. Now that our plant is not operating in that 24/7 mode, what goes on out in that grid becomes a real big concern and issue for us. And whether it's folks that are hacking the line or just Mother Nature out causing interruptions, reliability is an issue that is going to be on our radar going forward. Rate stability, we talked about that. Electric system reliability, big focus on that. We are still working on developing a second transmission interconnection. We're real close on picking a host utility that that we're looking to make that second interconnection with, which will give us a an independent source coming from a different location to kind of back up the existing transmission connection that we have currently with American Electric Power. I mentioned also earlier, we do look at our long-term power supply on an annual basis, and this year will be no exception to that. And going forward in all three of utilities, we're looking at aging infrastructure and having plans in place that we can deal with those assets as they mature, so we can replace those and continue providing that that service that we mostly take for granted. I'm going to wrap things up here from from an economic perspective. If you attended the chamber annual meeting last week, this was one of the highlights there again in this year. Our industries made some pretty sizable investment in our community. Since we've been tracking this since 2004, you can see the total investments, the number of jobs that were created and retained. Wayne County is still one of the top counties in the country that has an excellent economic development program. Mike Hedberg heads up that area for us from an industrial and commercial perspective, works closely with the city and Chris and Ensley, the Wayne County Economic Development Office, the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, Orville Chamber of Commerce. It is a total team effort to try to, one, get the businesses and industries into Ohio. Next, we try to get them into Wayne County. And then after that, we try to get them located here in Orville. And we have a great group of people that are working on that. And with that, that would conclude my presentation. I will take any questions that you may have. I will say that this entire presentation will be on our utility website, along with our detailed financial report here shortly. So any questions I can answer?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
What's going on, do you know what's going on with the Meigs County Power Plant project? If it's dead or alive, and if it is, do we have an interest?
The coal plant that we, along with 40 or 50 other Ohio municipalities, that project has been canceled. That project was canceled a couple years or so ago. We still own the property there at the site. We don't have any financial liability as far as stranded costs on that site. So we are looking at developing that site. We have about 800 acres down in Meigs County, Ohio, along the Ohio River, about 1,000 foot of river frontage. So we are looking at some other possible developments, and that may be even a sale of that property. But the project was officially canceled a couple years ago. There were some lawsuits filed against the developers that we embarked with on that. Those cases have all been settled. So right now we're just sitting on about 800-900 acres down in southern Ohio that's looking for something to do with there. So we have really no assets. We have really not, you know, very nominal, if any, financial exposure on that project. And a lot of that exposure went away when we became part of the three lines. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
I distinctly remember the big snacks and the hands on my first. Didn't we have refreshments in the past for this?
Yes.
I'm sure I remember that.
Ready, Adrian?
I'm ready.
Thank you, John.
No pressure, right?
Mr. Brenniger, thank you.
You're welcome.
Concludes the main business for our meeting for this evening. Does anybody have anything for the good of the order? I have.
I'm going to request an executive session. I don't know if we're at that point yet.
So we go to executive session?
Thank you. For
the purpose of discussing pending litigation.
Yes, what she said.
Second. Vance?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Korfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shu?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Thank you. We do not plan on having any further proceedings after the executive session, so anyone that's not involved in that session, get up and run away.
Power down.
Wow. Good idea, Jeffy. Good idea.
As the camera goes off. Is that right? You know, it's funny at the chamber bank.